It's Marty here. Welcome to First Up, Tuatahi, Ki Te Oho. It's Rāmere. Yeah, I know. Friday, the 19th of April. Ko Nathan Rāraria ho. Coming up, we've got the latest from the Trump trial in New York City. Also news from Calafi in the Pacific and Nabil in Africa. Katie Kenny updates us on the 3,000 public sector job cuts. We've also got news on an auction for anyone who's wished they could walk a mile in Michael Jordan's shoes. Glenn is here with his fruit of the week and the beautiful town of Taupō welcomes supercars for the first time.
On the world stage at little old Taupō, showing the world just what the regions can do. I think it's safe to say the peacock feathers are out and we are absolutely as proud as punch. We can't wait.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tuatahi Ki Te Oho. That's first up here at RNZ National. We start your Friday in New York City. There is Bevan Hurley, who's been watching all the moves out of Donald Trump's hush money trial, where it's apparently quite hard to find a jury nowadays. Bevan is with me right now. Kia ora, what's the latest out of the New York courtroom?
Kia ora, Nathan. Yeah, it's really two steps forward, one step back at the moment with swearing in this jury. Two of the seven who were sworn in on Tuesday have been excused this morning by Judge Juan Merchan. He scolded the media after one of the jurors said that they had been intimidated by press coverage. This juror said that the media had described her appearance in such detail that combined with public information about her profession and home had led to colleagues and friends identifying her. And it really reflects the historic nature of the case and the intense pressure in a politicised environment to find a panel of people who can be called upon to do their civic duty fairly and impartially. And Merchan directed their press to apply common sense and really refrain from any sort of physical description, saying that, you know, there was a reason why he has ordered that this jury remain anonymous. And another juror was unfortunately excused after they had found to have lied on their questionnaire. This juror was identified as being arrested for tearing down some political posters in the 1990s, despite saying that they had no criminal convictions. And meanwhile, Trump is back in hot water with the judge this morning after he shared posts attacking the jurors on his Truth Social platform. Prosecutors say he has now breached a gag order at least 10 times, and they're due to have a hearing where the judge will rule on that next Tuesday. He could be found in contempt, fined $1,000 on each individual order, and, you know, if he keeps doing it, could potentially be jailed. So, yeah, I mean, it's just there's a lot of headaches with this trial, and, you know, it all adds fodder to Trump's claims that he can't get a fair trial and will no doubt be part of his appeal should he be found guilty, Nathan.
Yes, might be the aim. Let's have a look at this. We'll go to Ukraine there, the Congress there in the US to vote on this Ukraine aid package. How likely is this to succeed?
Well, Speaker Mike Johnson is going to have to heavily rely on the support of Democrats to get this through. So after 6 months of delays when, you know, US allies, Ukraine have been crying out for help, Congress is finally due to vote on several foreign aid bills this weekend. And if passed, they would provide a collective $95 billion to Ukraine, Israel and US allies in the Indo-Pacific. But those aid packages have been in limbo amid fierce objections from far-right isolationist Republicans. And so Mike Johnson is now facing, you know, a revolt just 6 months into his tenure as Speaker. Working with the Democrats is an unforgivable sin on the MAGA right, and the likes of Marjorie Taylor Greene are basically promising to put forward motions for his removal. Meanwhile, you know, the US reputation as a reliable ally has just nosedived as Ukraine has come under these fierce assaults from Russia. Ukraine says it's at a 10-to-1 disadvantage in artillery. It's unable to defend civilian populations from the daily Russian bombardment and is struggling to find enough ammunition for its frontline soldiers. And what's baffling about all this, Nathan, is that most of this money gets spent in the US. It goes to weapons manufacturers, bringing jobs and investment to communities here. So, you know, it seems like a no-brainer, but here we are.
Yeah. Let's move to an interesting story. Prince Harry has become, I guess, Prince Howdy, officially listed the US as his primary residence. Why hadn't he done this before now?
Well, he very publicly declared when he announced in 2020 that he was stepping down from royal duties that the UK is his home and a place that he loves and that would never change. But it seems like 4 years on, much has changed. So these this sort of change of address came about from in documents filed at the UK's Registry of Businesses that showed that he's now listing his United States address. His address in the United States. And of course, you know, the Duke and Duchess West Sussex have not lived in the UK for years. They decamped to California 4 years ago. And Harry told a reporter in February that he'd been considering applying to become an American citizen as he and Megan continue to pursue their media careers here. So maybe not such a huge surprise. They live, of course, in Montecito, this exclusive beachside community in California that's home to Oprah and a lot of other, you know, big name celebrities. So he used his full name, Prince Henry Charles Albert David Duke of Sussex, on this change of address. So, yeah, it looks like the US is stuck with Harry for the foreseeable.
All right, there he is. Hey, thank you very much. There is Bevan Hurley in New York. And just in New York City, the time now is 10 past five. And you're listening to First Up on RNZ National. We're just having little bits of problems here happening here, in and out of getting our reports out of Africa. The internet sort of hates us there for a little bit. Oh, no, here we are. I think we're back. Let's try and get this one going. We go to Ghana right now in Accra. It's the proud father of three, Nabil Ahmed Rufai. Morena, Nabil. How you doing?
Fine, thank you, Nathan. I hope you're fine.
Yeah, talk to us about Burkina Faso. They've expelled a number of French diplomats. Why?
Yes, three French diplomats have been expelled from Burkina Faso. Now, they are being accused of working against the West African government, but no further details have been given about the exact activities the French diplomats were involved in. Now, France has responded to this, and they are saying that the allegations against the diplomats are unfounded. But what we know is that there's been strained relations between Burkina Faso and its former colonial power, France, for some years now. And there are suspicions that the move by Burkina Faso to expel the diplomats is a part of efforts to win itself from the hold of French power.
Okay. We've got some news out of Nigeria. Sad in the first case, but I guess a little bit happy here. A female student who was abducted 10 years ago has been rescued.
Yes, Nigeria marked the 10th anniversary of the abduction of nearly 300 schoolgirls in Chibok by bandits known as Boko Haram over the weekend. And the news of the rescue of the girl abducted comes as great news to many people. Now, Nigeria's army says it rescued the young woman who is now 5 months pregnant along with her three children. And since the abduction happened 10 years ago, more than 180 girls have either since escaped or been freed from Boko Haram hideouts, according to officials. But about 90 others are still missing and are suspected to still be under the hold of the militants known as Boko Haram. So there is a call for more rescue efforts to be undertaken to bring back those girls.
Okay. South Africa has just set a record. It's a different sort of record. The longest non-stop run of electricity and power for 2 years. How many days did they get to?
Well, this is the interesting one. 21 consecutive days without power cuts in South Africa is seen as a record and a big deal. And that's because it's the first time such a long streak has been achieved in nearly 2 years since the country started suffering to provide stable electricity across the country and has had to be rationing electricity or power for 2 years. Now, officials are attributing this current stable power supply to a reduced demand for electricity and the adequate emergency power reserves and an improvement in its electricity generation capacity. Now, there are now plans to continue to suspend the power cuts known locally as load shedding until further notice. And this is something that comes as a huge relief to many people and businesses in South Africa because they've been highly impacted. But some are still skeptical about this latest development. And they are speculating that the reduced power cuts could be a ploy by the ruling government to try to win votes in the elections that's due next month.
And then they've got the polar opposite problem, I guess, in Sierra Leone, where there's anger there over the lack of electricity in many parts of the country's major cities.
Yes, that's what's going on in Sierra Leone. And it's because the power producers in the country have decided to stop supplying the power due to the non-payment of electricity bills. Now, one of the power producer is Turkish Ship, that's known as the Car Power, and it's been supplying most of the electricity in the capital of Sierra Leone, Freetown. But the government owes it about $48 million. And even though the government has given assurances that it will settle the debt, it has not done so. So Car Powership has decided to really reduce its supply of power to the capital, Freetown. And aside that, there is also another power supplier called CLSG, which is owned by Ivory Coast. And they have also reduced the supply of power to other parts of Sierra Leone because the government owes the company. And this has really caused a lot of frustration among people in Sierra Leone.
Thank you very much. We are news out of Africa with Nabil Ahmed Rufai. 5:55 here at First Up on RNZ National. Let's get closer to home and out into the Pacific in Tonga. For First Up, it's Kalafi Moala. Morena Kalafi.
Yes, morena.
Now, a Tongan businessman has been jailed here in Auckland for smuggling Tongan tobacco and also for tax evasion. How long will Mosese Vakupuna spend in custody?
Yes, he has been sentenced to 28 months imprisonment at the Auckland District Court, 23 charges relating to defrauding the revenue of customs in the shipment of loose leaf tobacco into the country from Tonga. Over a period of 21 months, Mosese Vakupuna, age 60, smuggled more than 6,000 kilograms of what is known as Tongan tobacco into Auckland to be sold and distributed from his store in Auckland. New Zealand Customs busted Mr. Vakupuna and charged him for smuggling 6 tons of tobacco and evading more than $10 million in taxes. Customs Investigations Manager Dominic Adams said that while it is not illegal to import tobacco in commercial quantities, businesses and individuals need to declare it correctly, have the relevant import permits, and are liable to pay the taxes. Mr. Vakupuna evaded $10,300,945 in import and excise fees, customs said. It is noted that this may have been the biggest shipments of Tongan tobacco on record to any country. Tongan tobacco has been grown in Tonga for ages and consumed locally. But in recent years, the tobacco has become a lucrative export overseas, mostly for sale to Tongans overseas and other Pacific Islanders. There is also a potential big market developing in China. Word from the Chinese embassy in Tonga is that Tongan tobacco is in great demand and may be exported to China soon.
Okay. I see there that when we look at the airline, there's some serious concerns today about safety issues with Tonga's Lulutai Airlines. What's the story there?
Yes, Tonga only has one domestic airline, and that's the Lulutai Airlines. And news reports have spotlighted the airlines again, alleging that Lulutai Airlines Saab 34 airliner has its flight data recording or black box damaged since December last year. The airplane on one of its scheduled flights recently landed at Tuamotu Airport, ran off the runway, and crashed into a concrete wall. The plane is out of action and is seriously affecting flights to other islands in the kingdom. Aviation investigators into the accident have revealed to reporters that they could not get information from the flight data recording as it was not working properly. However, Lulutai Airlines has responded to news reports saying that the flight data recording as well as other information have all been handed over to investigators, and there have not been any indication or word from investigators that something is wrong with the black box. On the other hand, there have been extensive calls from critics in Tonga for the CEO and board members to resign. Controversy with the government-owned airline arose due to frequent technical issues with the planes, as well as the controversial appointment of the CEO not long after he lost his parliament seat because of bribery.
Thank you very much for that report out of the Pacific. That's First Up's Kalafi Moala. 20 past five, Nathan Rarity here at First Up on RNZ National. It's an exciting, exciting weekend in the hometown of the Minister of Fruit and Veg. Not just fruit and veg, but also a bit of rubber, meat and some asphalt. And also we talked to the boss, this is interesting, of a New Jersey auction house selling a fascinating collection of basketball boots.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. There they are, standing in the air. Big ones, small ones, some as big as
your head. We head to the fresh produce markets now where it never rains, unless it's that beautiful controlled mist. It's the Minister of Fruit and Veg. It's Morena Glenn. How are you doing, Glenn Forsyth, Minister of Fruit and Veg?
Morena, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. We're just disappointed with that cricket not happening. Now let's talk the value here, not the cost, the value of veggies this week.
Exactly. We are going to change tack and not talk about the cost of fruit veggies, but their value. So remember last month, four food categories rose, but produce dropped, according to Stats New Zealand. So autumn is arguably the best season to start eating more good value produce, especially to fend off the chills and ills. We still have the flow on of summer salad lines and greens, plus all those vitamin-packed root crops being harvested and their nutritious jackets that they have. And Mother Nature is always on cue with new season apples, pears, kiwi fruit, lemons and mandarins. But here is where it gets interesting. From Stats New Zealand again, have a guess from 2019 what the average New Zealand household spend per week was on fruit and vegetables.
About $30.
Yeah, very interesting. Only $23.50.
$23.50, right. It's hard to remember those times.
Well, that's true. Australia from 2022, by the way, was $29. Now, for a laugh, I priced up one large burger combo and six chicken bite thingies from a fast food restaurant. So that came to a frightening $25.50, or $50 for a couple. So then earlier this week, I went to your local fruit and veg greengrocer, Nathan in Hobsonville, and brought the following in-season items. Now have a look at this. 1 kilo tomatoes, they were only $4.99. A celery, two broccoli, a kilo of apples, kilo of kumara, 5 kilo agri potatoes, a lettuce, 700 gram feijoas, it keeps going, 800 grams of mandarins, 800 grams of gold kiwi fruit, and some mushrooms. So total cost for a lot more healthy meals than a candlelit dinner for two of fast food, it came to $44.70 and 12 kilos in weight of produce. So this is what we mean by value for overall cost, health and weight. In-season produce has it all trumped. What do you think? It's pretty unreal.
It is. Was it a crispy chicken or a grilled chicken burger? Well, oh, sorry. Anyway, hey, let's go. Fruit. We're actually out, when you're out looking and you were having a look around there, what fruit and veggies are in stock this week?
Okay, so along with all these glorious items mentioned just before, there are good supplies on more vegetables, including carrots, onions, pumpkin, leeks, spinach and parsnips. It's quite incredible the amount of produce we have available to eat right now. And some more fruit choices are New Zealand strawberries, feijoas and limes, plus imported lines chiming in like grapes, USA oranges and Philippine pineapples and pawpaw. Feijoas, now they've got an impressive resume. They are a wonderful source of antioxidants, fibre, vitamin C and other minerals. Benefits of consuming feijoas include supporting digestion, gut function, heart health, immune defences and another very cool benefit, positive moods. Now finishing on vegetable, we love introducing in autumn fresh chocos. Do you give these a go when they're in season 8? Have you tried chocos?
I bet I'm about to after I hear what I do with them. What do I do with them?
Okay, well, we always love talking with the lovely Judy and David Gray in Gisborne. They have been growing them now 40-odd years and sending their beautiful chocos to the Wellington and South Island markets at their best now for another month and can be enjoyed in stir-fry soups or casserole. Stir-fry is my favourite. Or a delicate flavour eaten on their own, just simply steamed, boiled or sautéed. So give them a try. Let us know.
All right. And Glenn, I don't know if it's a choco can't count as that, but what is the fruit of the week?
Well, this is quite a hard case, not only because it's making its debut, but it is also our introduction tune. We are going with the brilliant Samoan coconuts.
Yes!
Unbelievable. Alistair Turner, from fifth generation marketer in Auckland, he's been selling these for 10 years now, and he has plenty to move. He has visited the growers over their two main islands and eaten their coconut in the plantations for inspection, including that super vegetable taro with coconut milk. Now, when would you have bought a fresh coconut for this from the store for the family last?
Oh, probably a couple of months ago. Miss turning 13 today. She loves a coconut. Loves them. I love them too.
Oh, that That is so nice to hear. Well, they're at a great prices currently. Shop around and find them for $2 to $2.50 each, you know, and at about a kilo. Again, great tucker for great value. Mm. Punch out the holes, drink the milk, and call your kids' friends over, maybe for a 13th birthday, and have a good old smash them up coconut show in the backyard. My work colleague Coy from the Cooks, he loves the fresh coconut milk for body recovery. He enjoys the flesh raw or grated over fresh fruit salad and ice cream for the kids, even squeezing oil from the older ones, and they call them the tree of life over there. It's a marvellous fruit.
It is. It was the basis for entire economies for many centuries. Thank you very much, Glenn Forsyth.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
It's the day of our life. We call the 19th of April. The tallest person in my house turns 13 today. 13. Taller than me before she was 13. Anyway, happy birthday to you, babe. Love you. Maria Sharapova turns 37 years old today. Actor James Franco is 46. And another actor too who, I mean, what a performance.
How'd you do,
yes.
See, you've met my...
You go, Tim Curry.
Faithful handyman.
A handyman. I cannot help but see one of those vans everywhere I go and say handyman. He is 78 years old today. Famous folk born on this day, Charles Darwin and Dudley Moore as well. Now, on this day in 1927, Mae West, the American actress, she was sentenced to 10 days in jail. They said she was convicted of obscenity, corrupting the morals of youth. She portrayed a prostitute in the Broadway play Sex, which she also wrote, and they sent her to jail. And of course, the publicity made her a national celebrity and really put her career over the top. Good for her. On this day in 1943, Albert Hoffman deliberately doses himself with LSD for the first time, 3 days after discovering the effects by accident and going, well, I'm going to go on that, just see what happens. And probably invented funk music. History. The Beatles signed a contract on this day in 1967, agreeing to stay together for 10 years. Hint, they don't. On this day in 1984, not only did the Australians say, let's go with green and gold as our national colours, they used to be that blue that like you see New South Wales in, but Advance Australia Fair became their national anthem. On this day in 1986, Prince told us you don't have to watch Dynasty to have an attitude as he hit number one with Kiss. And in 2002, Jeepster by T-Rex, I don't even know that song, becomes the first song successfully identified by that little app that's on your phone for the, what is the song, called Shazam, and it used to just be your mate Dave. And those are happenings on the 19th of April.
Cash rules everything around me, queen, get the money, dollar bill, yo.
Coming from the business team right now, it's Anand Zaki. Kia ora, Anand, how are you?
Kia ora, I am well, thank you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. This education startup wants to target workers displaced by AI. What is all this?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's pretty accepted that artificial intelligence is likely to change many workplaces in the near future, right? I mean, in some places it probably already has. And I spoke to a startup. It's an online-based company. And they want to help upskill the likely growing number of displaced non-tech workers, particularly AI. And the company's called NextWork. They are Wellington-based, but of course, being online, people can access it from anywhere. And in a bid to test their platform and raise awareness, NextWork wants to recruit 1,000 non-tech workers, for a free Amazon Web Services certification course. And they've raised $2.3 million in early funding, and students, they say, can learn at their own pace. So it's a bit different when the pace is, you know, set by the learner and not the teacher. And they reckon that'll help a lot of people, gives people flexibility. And I spoke to NextWork's founder, Amber Joseph, and she says her goal is to make it easy and accessible for people to upskill because of the changing nature of workplaces. And like I mentioned at the start, particularly because of AI, because you and I, you know, we've spoken about artificial intelligence a lot on this program, and it's moving at an incredible speed, isn't it? I mean, some might say terrifyingly quick. And Amber Joseph believes, you know, it could displace a lot of people from really well-paying jobs, but she says that doesn't mean all hope is over and people won't be able to work again. She says it's a chance for those people to upskill and learn things that'll help promote them or get them into an entry level in a new field. And she reckons the current education system basically doesn't upskill those people quickly enough to adapt to those changing working conditions. So really interesting proposal. And yeah, like I said, they want to recruit 1,000 people into tech as soon as possible on this free course and prove their platform. But the potential for them to grow is limitless, and it doesn't just have to be tech. But yeah, always cool to hear about New Zealand startups, and yeah, all the best to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And Anzaki, you can hear more from the business team on Morning Reports this morning at 10 to 7. The New Zealand dollar is out there buying things. Here is what it attracts to it. 59.12 US cents, 91.98 Australian cents, 47.45 British pence, 55.49 Euro cents, 91.4 Japanese yen, and 4.28 yuan. Well, sport memorabilia is a big business around the world, and it's growing, and everything from baseball cards right up to racing cards are being sold at auction houses across the United States every single week. And at an auction currently underway online, there is a consignment of signed basketball boots, and these are very, very special, and they have an interesting backstory. Brian Dwyer is the president of Robert Edwards Auctions in New Jersey, and I asked him about the history of this collection.
This has a great story. 40 years ago, a ball boy for the NBA's Detroit Pistons had the foresight to collect all these sneakers in the mid-1980s when players passed through, and he got dozens of different pairs from some of the biggest names in the game.
Oh, my goodness. Mid-80s Detroit Pistons. That's about as good as it gets, because he's got, what is that, Thomas running around out there. There's, I mean, that's, we've got, oh, we've got Michael Jordan. We've got, what, there must be so many famous feet there. What are the crown jewels of this consignment as you have a look at it?
So he had the good fortune of working with a rookie in his first season named Michael Jordan, who came through Detroit with the Bulls. So Michael Jordan's a big name. Isaiah Thomas, you referenced, Robert Parrish, Dominique Wilkins, Sidney Moncrief. I mean, oh, just great players that are Hall of Famers.
Wow. So do you know at the time, was he just a fan who loved shoes and was collecting signatures, or was this like a long-term plan thinking this will be my investment?
No, I think he was just a total fan. He got the job as a ball boy for the Pistons because he loved sports. He loved basketball. He was an athlete himself. And I think that when he had that level of access, he enjoyed hanging around the players. And if he could have a piece to remember them by, remember some of the great stories that he had, he decided that he'd make the effort. And it didn't go all smoothly, but he got a few dozen by the time all was said and done.
Brian, even as far away as New Zealand here, like I'm on pretty much the other side of the planet from you. I know people that are huge collectors of shoes, of sneakers, particularly the basketball ones. What sort of ballpark figure are you looking at here? Because this won't just be interest from around where you are, will it?
No, we're getting interest from all over the world. I mean, to your point, basketball is a global sport. Michael Jordan's a global name. We don't have to be sitting in Chicago to understand how important he is. So already they're nearing $200,000. We expect they'll go for north of $500,000 U.S. And a similar pair 2.5 years ago actually sold for $1.47 million U.S. So pretty significant numbers.
Oh, my goodness. Who buys these things?
Collectors, by and large. I mean, every once in a while, you'll have a museum or an institution or a sports team that'll get involved with the bidding. But usually, it's just collectors who love the stories, love the history, love the players, and want a piece.
The Jordans, though. Tell us, why are the Jordans so special?
Well, anything that has to do with Michael Jordan just stops collectors in their track. I mean, he is arguably the greatest to ever play the game, and it's like Babe Ruth in baseball or Wayne Gretzky in hockey or whatever the equivalent is down in New Zealand, just these guys who transcend their sport. And Michael Jordan's one of them. This is from the very earliest part of his career. He switched over to his trademark Jordan 1s in November of 1984, so he could have only worn these for a couple months at most, And you've seen a lot of big numbers recently with Jordan items. He's had jerseys that have sold for big dollars. He had a $10 million jersey. He had an $8 million collection of sneakers go up for auction recently. So collectors love Michael Jordan.
My goodness. In a Disney film, what you do is you buy those boots and then you put them on and you can dunk probably from the halfway line. Yeah. Do you think that people will actually try these on just sneakily, just to put their foot in it and just, you know, have that Cinderella dream?
Well, you know, if you're size 13 or lower, then you could theoretically fit in them. I wouldn't advise it, but Michael Jordan wore a different size shoe on each foot, believe it or not. So that's a pretty neat story as well. He had a 13 on one side and a 13 and a half on the other. But if you try it on, send us a picture. We'd love to see it.
See, like an idiot, I've been walking around with the same size shoes on either foot. Imagine my NBA career. I could have had. Brian, that would have been amazing. What other interesting memorabilia do you have up for auction?
We have a perfect condition Michael Jordan rookie card. So if you don't have the budget for the game used shoes, you can get his rookie card. We've got a lot of other basketball cards. Babe Ruth here in the States, big name with respect to baseball. We've got some really significant autographs from his career. Jackie Robinson, today is the anniversary of Jackie Robinson integrating baseball. We've got photos and autographs. And then going back to Jordan, we actually have his high school prom photo. So when he was a senior in high school, he took a girl to a dance, and we have a picture of it.
Where can our listeners have a look at these auctions online?
If you head to our website, it's robertedwardauctions.com. You can check out everything that we have up for sale. It goes through the end of this weekend, so Sunday the 21st is the last day to bid. And you don't have to have the $1 million that it'll take to buy Jordan. We've got stuff of all price levels.
That was Brian Dwyer from Robert Edwards Auctions, and that auction ends this Sunday. Turn up the music and dance to the radio. Listen to sports on the special report. Here's what you need to know. Joe Porter would have loved that. Did you hear that, Joe?
Yeah, that was fascinating.
Oh, sportsman. My friend John has the best bit of sports memorabilia I know. So we were at a game on the North Shore. Remember when the All Blacks put 100 on Tonga, I think it was? And that scoreboard only had two figures, and they had to make a one out of out of white paper with, what do you call it, with just a black gaffer tape. And my friend John climbed up the scoreboard afterwards and took it, and he's got it at home. How about that?
That's pretty fantastic.
Beat that.
Pretty fantastic.
Jordan shoes. Yeah. How did you enjoy the... Which ball out of the two that was bowled in the cricket today was your favourite?
Well, not the one that got Tim Robinson out for a duck.
It was a good ball.
It was a good ball, so probably deserves a bit of respect, actually. But yes, very very unfortunate that the cricket couldn't quite get underway. They were hoping to squeeze in a 5-over game, which seemed somewhat pointless, but it would have been... no wonder Tim Robinson got out for a duck. You have to go out there in a 5-over game and hit a 6 from the first ball. So not the easiest way to come out and make your first innings there, but there you go. Mm-hmm. 5-over game not to be because of rain and a wet outfield in Rawalpindi for the opening T20, the Black Caps Pakistan. It's a Black Caps B-side largely that's over there because, of course, there's the IPL commitments going on for a lot of players, and there's been a few injuries too. So a good chance for a few of these younger guys on the cusp of the T20 squad for the World Cup to get a chance in the subcontinent, although it won't be in those conditions for the World Cup later this year. It's always a good experience to have over playing in India or Pakistan and getting used to those conditions, which can be pretty tricky for travelling sides. So a shame they couldn't get some cricket today, but never mind. There is still quite a bit on this weekend and today even. So
squish it in for us, Joe. What have we got?
Well, Lydia Ko actually is currently on course in the LPGA's first women's major of the year, I think it is, the Chevron Championship. So she's sitting tied for fifth at the moment, 2 under par through about 13 odd holes, 4 behind the leader, which is not too bad for Lydia Ko. I think she's won this tournament before, maybe in 2016, which seems a while ago now, doesn't it? But she's had a decent season so far, and of course if she wins this major, that gives her enough points to qualify her for the Hall of Fame, which is quite amazing considering she's still very young. And then of course tonight three big games. You've got the Warriors, of course, taking on the Dragons in Wollongong. Some great news this week for them with the signing of the Panthers prop James Fisher-Harris.
Yes.
And they'll be wanting to bounce back from what was a lucky draw really against Manly and prove they're a better side than that. A-League maybe the most important one. The Phoenix seems like they're having of course they are at the top of the table, the race for the men's premiership, the minor premiership and the men's A-League. So of course they play the Newcastle Jets tonight in Newcastle. A win there would push them closer to winning their first ever silverware. And the Hurricanes take on the Fijian and Drua over
tough
in Suva, which which will be a little bit cooler possibly because it's 7:05 at night rather than in the afternoon. But again, just a hard place to go. No other Super Rugby team has won in Fiji so far this year. So a challenge for the unbeaten Hurricanes. That should be a good clash too.
It is indeed. Joe Porter, thank you very much for your time. I said, oh God, because I sounded slightly impartial there. I mean, I hope both teams have a good time and make friends. Thank you very much, Joe Porter. Heading towards 6 o'clock here, Nathan Rarere at First Up on RNZ National. With me before the end of the program, Katie Kenny explains about the big picture behind the thousands of public service job cuts and what they're going to do. And Taupo International Motorsport Park gearing up for an awesome weekend. We're going to hear from the boss, Josie Spillane. Morning Report crew are standing by to deliver things in a professional manner. Here's Corin Dan. How are you?
Very well, Nathan. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Yep, a busy Friday show to end the week. We'll look at Fire and Emergencies report into Cyclone Gabriel. We'll hear from our reporter Craig McCulloch too with more on Prime Minister Christopher Luxon's visit through Southeast Asia. This time the focus has been on Philippines and looks to attempts to, I guess, bolster defence ties there. Now, on the defence issue too, very interesting debate that has been rumbling along about whether or not New Zealand should be part of the second tier of the AUKUS defence agreement. This is really the nuclear subs agreement between Australia and the US. We might sort of tag along and do some of the technology stuff that's sort of lower level. Bob Carr, former Australian Foreign Minister, was here yesterday speaking at a panel that Labor hosted to try and get some debate going on this to see whether or not, there's been enough thought given to whether or not we should join. He is very critical. I don't even think I can repeat what he said. He might have heard it yesterday.
Really?
He was describing it as in fairly strong language.
Right.
Not keen on it.
Oh, it's a bit early for that rough talk in the morning.
A little bit early. He was very much not keen. But as I say, it's still both Labour and National saying that they just thinking about this. But it's a very important decision for New Zealand to make or not make. And so we'll continue the debate on that this morning.
All right, thank you very much. It's Corin Dan, of course, here after 6 with the Morning Report. More than 3,000 jobs have gone or are going as part of the government's efforts to reduce public service spending by $1.5 billion annually. More announcements are expected. Wow. Joining me now is our RNZ Explainer editor, Katie Kenny, to give us the lowdown on these job cuts. There's so many. What are some of the patterns that you've noticed, Katie?
Kia ora, Nathan. Yeah, data to date, and I should point out, as you've already mentioned, that we are expecting more announcements. So this is continually changing and the patterns are obviously shifting as well. But what we know right now suggests that some of the smaller organisations have been the most affected. We looked at the number of losses. And again, some are still to be finalised against workforce data from the end of last year. So, for example, we know the Productivity Commission has been axed to make way for the new Ministry of Regulation, with 20 staff losing their jobs. And we've seen the Ministry for Pacific People set to lose more than half its full-time roles. So that relates to 32 people currently employed, as well as 31 vacant positions. The Ministry for Culture and Heritage has cut close to 20% of its workforce since mid-2023, so it started doing cuts a little bit earlier than a lot of the other agencies. So against a baseline of the workforce at the end of last year, current proposals would result in a loss of about 9%. No. So it's really interesting, despite it being like the core public service being asked to make cuts, we are also seeing deep cuts at smaller Crown entities, and those are ones that obviously function at arm's length from the government. So we've seen WorkSafe and Callaghan Innovation and Crown Research Institute NIWA, for example, make pretty significant cuts as well.
Wow. There's got to be, is there anyone bucking the trend? Anybody? Any agencies?
We are seeing significant cuts at the bigger agencies as well. I mean, the Department of Internal Affairs that was announced a wee while ago now is cutting 16% of its nearly 3,000 staff. So that's obviously hugely significant, but more than 400 of the 455 losses come from winding up work on national water reform. And that's kind of a common theme as well around, I guess, some of the bigger agencies have had really big policy change programs coming to an end. We've also had big announcements this week at Oranga Tamariki, a net loss of about 400 jobs are on the chopping block, and that would be about 9% of its workforce. And at the Ministry of Education, nearly 600 jobs are on the line, and that equates to about 13% of its full-time roles at December last year.
I see one of the ministers, I think, was saying, like, no, but this will actually make them run better. I don't know about that. How will some of these agencies cope with such reduced staffing?
Without seeing detailed plans, it's really hard to know. There have been a lot of reports around teams, different teams that are being cut. And, you know, for example, in the Ministry of Education, we know that the curriculum team is bearing the brunt of a lot of cuts. And we also know that Finance Minister Nicola Willis has said that frontline staff isn't to be touched, but there's been a lot of back and forth around, well, what exactly is frontline staff? Because some of the people sort of in the more regional offices for the Ministry of Education are considered by principals to be crucial to frontline. So it's hard to know, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make, what exactly we will see as a result of these changes. And I think in some cases, bosses will find that they've lost staff that they didn't necessarily wish to lose. You know, this is all being done really quickly. Big cuts being done in a pretty short space of time, and we still probably have to get through a few more before the dust settles and everyone's able to kind of figure out what's gone on. I should point out, though, as well, that, you know, the public service has grown significantly in recent years, and we've kind of talked a wee bit about this before, but if you go back to mid-2017, the core public service, so that's obviously those like 39 ministries and departments, it employed just under 50,000 people. And now, well, as at the end of last year, it comprises just under 66,000. So we've seen jobs created as part of big kind of initiatives, you know, the water infrastructure and health reforms, and obviously the COVID response has come to an end. So it makes sense we'd see losses at some point there. But still, these cuts that we're seeing now only unwind a fraction of the growth that we've seen under the previous government.
Well, there we go. Apparently a lot of people off to the unemployment line. Katie, thank you so much for your time. There we are with our RNZ Explainer. That's our Explainer editor, Katie Kenny.
Thanks, Nathan.
Start your engines. The supercars are coming to race at the Great Lake this weekend. A sellout crowd of excited race fans heading to the Taupo International Motorsport Park. It's been a busy old time too, as organisers get that track all ready and spick and span. And Taupo International Motorsport Park CEO Josie Spillane told me it has been a thrilling build-up.
Very exciting. I think it's safe to say the peacock feathers are out and we are absolutely as proud as punch. We can't wait.
Before I get into the race week, because it's never just the day. I know you set up and you go a week. Tell me about getting to where you are right now. How late's it been? You know, like how many late nights have you crammed into this last year organising this?
It's certainly been a journey for a group of people, and there is no one person who can do this. And we talk about it in the fact that, you know, really it's become the collective sum of all the parts, and the momentum has just been breathtaking. Supercars are essentially the conductor, and with the closure of Pukekohe when it was announced from 2022 to now, here we are in 2024, about to host the new era of supercars at the motorsport park. Essentially, the orchestra has been singing from the same page for several months now, from the motorsport community, the incredibly passionate Taupo community, major events and their support, to the suppliers and the contracts, the local hapu, and then of course our very small but very mighty Taupo team. We've now announcing a sold out event. There's just a few tickets available on Friday, and we still had trucks arriving at 1 a.m. last night. So the nights are long, yeah. The days are beautiful, and the anticipation is just so high. And I can't wait.
I'm pleased for you all with all that work too, that ticket sales have gone really well. Normally when a big event comes in, there's things like, yep, we like this, but can you just change this? Changing track configuration could be quite hard, I imagine. Was there anything that you needed to adjust to come up to their spec that they asked for?
Yeah, look, we've been really fortunate in the fact we purchased, and colloquial we, a gentleman, Tony Quinn, who owns three circuits in New Zealand now, Highlands and Cromwell, Hampton Downs and the Waikato and Taupo. He purchased that at the end of 2021. So the last 2 years, the team has been really focused on bringing the park up to Quinn's standard, as we call it. So there's been very little that we've actually had to do to change for the circuit for it to be ready for supercars. It's always been a fantastic races track. It's very technical at the start. There's a lot of corners. There's a fantastic long back straight. So the foundations were great, and Tony's come along and the team, and we've put some lipstick on it, and I'm looking out at the moment and it just looks absolutely stunning, if I do say so myself.
Well, good, you should say so yourself. I think it's great. Tell me about, there's, you know, not just the big race here with the supercars. Tell us, what are the other classes of vehicle that people get to see?
Yes, we've got some of the best racing that New Zealand showcases as well as Porsche Carrera Cup coming over from Australia. So that's going to be absolutely stunning. We've got Formula Ford, which is grassroots here in New Zealand. They've got their championship. That's 17, 18, 19-year-old boys and girls coming up and being part of such a massive showcase of motor racing. It's the final for the Toyota 86 Gazoo Racing Championship too. So there's a lot on the line happening this weekend in several other categories. So plenty of action on track as well as off track. And for the first time, all 24 supercars are going to go from the Motorsport Park into Roberts Street in the middle of town down by the Love Taupo sign. Oh. There's going to be a massive driver signing. You know, it really does show what happens in New Zealand with can do, will do, let's make it happen.
V8 supercars is going to hate that. What, you're going to put our cars in front of this incredible scenic view on the outside there with lots of happy people? Oh, they'll be hating it, won't they? We're just going
Hello, look at New Zealand on the world stage at little old Taupo showing the world just what the regions can do. I just have to say again, I was stranded on the side of the road this morning. My car had a bit flat battery. The mayor of the town happened to pull up at 6:30 this morning, offered me a ride, and he made comment that this is the highlight of his career. And I think it starts from the top down. The way that this community has embraced us at the Motorsport Park and the supercars community has just been outstanding.
Well, look, I hope you have a fantastic weekend. We should remind people heading along, you're not the racing driver. When you leave, drive carefully on the way home. It's what you do, all
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Leave the racing for the track.
Exactly. Josie Spillane, it's been a pleasure. All the best for the week.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have a good weekend, whatever you are up to this weekend. We're going to take you back to 1986 now. He could play guitar, couldn't he? My goodness me. Prince, on this day, the song was number one. It is Kiss. Thank you for your patronage all week here at RNZ. The Morning Report crew are standing by. If you miss us across the weekend, a lot of people do, you just downloaded the podcast and you can just hear a little bit of a familiar voice. Otherwise, wait until Monday when we are back with you. Go. You go, Prince. Sing it. Sing it, buddy. Sing it. Sing it. Sing it.
Yes.